Yeah, it's working.
Test,
Is yours?
test. Yeah, that's
Yeah. Okay.
okay. Great sermon.
Hey, thanks. Should we tell people what this is? That it's
Yeah,
continuing
this is our
conversations?
first one. We are at Copper Canyon Bar and
Yeah,
Grill.
it's geolocated us to the bar. I wish we were at the bar. That would be
Wish we
nice.
were at the bar.
But alas,
Great.
we're still in
Great.
church, even when the iPad says we're not. This podcast idea kind of grew out of wanting a space to continue the conversation from the sermon, but in a space that is more appropriate for a dialogue. Since a sermon is a monologue, it's not really the appropriate space for somebody to step up and say, I had this idea. I would tell them to, as much as I value people's input, please sit down because I have a whole thing written here.
Please sit down. I've prepared
I
this.
prepared this. I worked really
For
hard on
you.
this, despite what you may think. Yeah, so this would be a space to continue the conversation and also talk about maybe some things that I wanted to say or you wanted to say, but it didn't make it into the sermon.
Yeah, I think there's like sermons right now in what's going on in the world and what we have to say or have researched about some of these gospel passages, like they could be 40 minutes long.
Oh,
And
easily, yeah.
I don't know, I go through my sermons and I'm like all of this stuff and then cut, cut, cut. Oh, can't say that.
Yeah.
Oh, like
A lot makes it on the edit room floor. Sadly,
yes.
I would like to say a
Yes.
lot of things, but we try to keep it to about 10 minutes. That seems to be about the length of time that's appropriate and people can actually pay attention to. And also, that's just sort of the way it should be. You know, get up, preach the gospel, sit back down, and there's no need to sit and go on for a half an hour, even though there's tangents I could go on, but you know, people would tune out, understandably so.
Well, and this gives us a chance, I think, too. You know, you gave the sermon, gives me a chance a little bit to be like, oh, I was thinking about this, or I took some notes this one, since I knew we were going to do this, to say I maybe would have gone this direction, or I as you were talking about that thing, I thought about this, or
Yeah, different things you could say, which is great because then you can be a part of the conversation as well, since you weren't on the schedule to preach this week and you may have had something really important to say, which I'm sure you did. One thing I liked, and I did mention this in my sermon, but I do like that this is one of those instances in the lectionary where one reading comes at the heels of the reading the week before, which is really nice because then we can just keep going. We have a lot of colleagues, people we talk to at the ministerium, that bunched this reading and last week's reading into one mega reading and did
Oh,
it last week.
you talk to different people than I do,
Yeah,
because
I heard
I
that
didn't
from a
do that,
couple,
but
being like,
okay.
I don't like that it's broken up. I think the story only makes sense if you hear Jesus says the good news about the blind and the captive and the oppressed, and then immediately gets thrown off the cliff. It's kind of weird that one Sunday he preaches that good news, and then the next Sunday you get to hear what the people said.
Okay, I get it.
But I like it. It gives it more time to breathe because you could give your good news and bad news and good news sermon, and then I could go a different direction with it. So I like that. I'll start by saying one of the things that I didn't talk about in my sermon that I had thought about was, and it's always tempting to me to do in passages like this, but it's dangerous and bad, I think, for preachers to, when they hear something that Jesus did, go, here's how I relate to Jesus in the story. You know, Jesus is not the person ever in the gospel we should be the one relating to, because Jesus is the one that we compare ourselves to and see how much we fall short, right? But there were a couple stories I had in my mind of ways and times that I've preached, and I felt like the people wanted to throw me off a cliff afterwards. That just happens in the life of a preacher. So it's very tempting in this gospel passage in particular to go, they tried to throw Jesus off a cliff. I hope you don't try to throw me off a cliff, hearty har. But like that could have been a good way to enter into a personal story that I just didn't get to. But also, the context of what I wanted to talk about was like, I don't want to really joke this morning because at the end of my sermon, I tried to bring it to what Jesus is talking about, but in a modern context in today's world where, you know, people are being taken from their homes, a place that they called home just because their immigration status is a little bit fuzzy and they're caught in the system and now suddenly they're uprooted and their family is split and now they're going back to a place that they don't even know, they don't even call home anymore, and that's that's heavy and that's really sad. And I think we as a nation are grieving all this stuff. So it didn't really feel like a Sunday really to be super jokey when usually I try to, but this was kind of a heavy thing to start off with.
Well, and it's, yeah, I think as preachers, we are expected to always have a personal story or mm-hmm. have some kind of place where we put ourselves in it mm-hmm. or are talked to, and something, I don't know, as big or as serious as this
yeah.
and getting to more of a even somber, like mm-hmm. story that you're trying to tell or illustration that you're trying to make, it doesn't make any sense to bring yourself into it
no.
as a, I personally mm-hmm. we're not affected yeah. by it. Like that is yeah. kind of the point.
When Jesus is talking about the poor and the captive and yeah. the oppressed, and I'm going to, I burnt my toast this morning and yeah. like, oh man, yeah. I'm so oppressed. Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I don't want to, it seems inappropriate in a lot of ways, but.
So the haters will come and say that wasn't
yeah.
entertaining.
Yeah. The haters will say, we see you out there. Haters, just kidding. Everybody on this account loves us, I'm sure. No, for sure.
Our 30 listeners.
Yeah, that's right. And I see you all 30. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. What did you have any continuing conversation?
I do, but I want to ask it in the form mm-hmm. of a question.
Oh, good.
I was thinking about the change of emotions mm-hmm. that happened throughout this passage. From a welcome of Jesus, mm-hmm. a like, we love you, our mm-hmm. hometown boy, we celebrate you that you're home, to such a quick transition to rage. Like, this
yeah.
isn't just a like, maybe we don't love him. It's a like,
we're going to murder you.
Yeah,
yeah, we're going to shuck you off a cliff.
So quickly. I don't know. Was there any process of that in going through?
Yeah. And
emotions going through your sermon?
Yeah, because it's weird. It's they even say in the gospel text in verse 22, all spoke well of him. All
yeah.
spoke well of him. And then later, after Jesus essentially says, hey, you want me to do some tricks for you? You think yeah. I'm going to be your little yeah. pet and you're yeah. going to try to claim me as your own. Remember Elijah and Elisha, they went out to those people that you called
right.
your enemies.
Right.
After he says this, it says in verse 28, all in the synagogue were filled with rage. So
yeah.
all spoke well of him and were amazed and filled with awe. And then later, all were filled with rage. It's amazing to hear such like stark contrast
yeah.
and that the writer of the Gospel of Luke made it so apparent that all were amazed and were proud and then all were filled with rage. There wasn't a guy in the back going, I don't know, I think this Jesus guy is onto something.
Yeah.
And there wasn't one guy who was, well, I don't know, I don't really like this Jesus. You know, it's they all loved him and they all hated him. There's no gray area
yeah,
absolutes. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Like, that's how our brains process
mm-hmm.
things so quickly, that when there is like an uncomfortable moment or when there's a shift in like,
yeah.
oh, maybe I don't understand something,
mm-hmm.
we go straight to like, I'm done with that. Throw
yeah.
it off a cliff. Like, I don't want
yeah.
to be anywhere near that. This isn't, you know, comfortable
yeah.
for me or whatever. So,
yeah.
'Cause then I made a whole list of like things or reasons I would want to throw people or throw things off a cliff.
Yeah,
that
there's
was
lots.
My like what rage inside me
mm-hmm.
from a initial reaction standpoint would lead me to be like, throw it off a cliff. I'm done with that. Like,
yeah. Yeah. There's a lot these days that you want to throw off a cliff and I get that. And you know, that does speak,
yeah.
I think to the modern, this social media age too,
yeah.
that like, how accurate is that? That when anytime anything happens in the news, or pop culture or whatever, the first thing most people do is either turn on the TV to hear what some pundit has to say or open up social media and see what whoever on Blue Sky or Instagram or whatever, what their favorite influencer is saying, so they can
yeah.
figure out what
yeah.
how am I supposed to
like,
react
to
this?
Am
what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to be happy or sad or confused or filled with rage or what? Yeah, that whole There's no middle ground these days, it seems, on social media. You either love something or you hate it.
Yeah.
And in how many cases, too, do we love a celebrity and we're like, they're so great, they're so funny, they're so quirky, they're so down to earth, and how quickly we turn on them as a culture and be like, oh, now we hate them. Mm-hmm. Like this summer, it was like everybody loves Chapel Roan. Chapel Roan, she's so great, the Midwest princess, we love her, everybody's going to her shows. And she says like two things, and suddenly everybody's like, who does she think she is?
Well, just, she's so stuck up. You could name any celebrity, you know.
And that happens.
Lizzo, this happened to Ellen DeGeneres.
High and low. Taylor Swift, even, your beloved. We love her so much.
We would never say it.
And now people are like, oh, I hate Taylor. Get her off my screen. I'm so sick of seeing her. It's like, I don't know. We're so hot and cold as a culture.
Cool. Okay, celebrities, but, you know, Target did this.
Yeah, Target.
This week, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, Target's all in on DEI, all in on inclusivity.
They're the pride of pride. And now they're the hate of pride.
And and then all of a sudden it just became cool to like turn.
What a heel turn.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Crazy.
And so where maybe then in that process of going from, you know, embracing Jesus to
throwing him off a cliff.
Like, what is that journey through that maybe we got to slow down and
take a breath as
take
people.
A breath, take a, like, I have to learn about this thing.
Yeah.
I need to see a why through this. And I need to look at a context, like Jesus going to his hometown. There was some celebration of like, this is our boy. This is our loyalty.
He's back.
We love him. He's our, you know, he's ours. There's a claim to him.
We've heard and all this cool stuff he's doing in Capernaum.
Yeah.
But now he's back. He's going to do stuff like that here. We can claim him as our own.
Well, okay, so that was rational for them to say, hey, you're doing that stuff over there. You're going to come here and do the same stuff.
Yeah, finally. Right? Come back home. Yeah.
So I don't think that was irrational for them to believe.
Right.
But when Jesus comes and is like, no, that's not for you guys. Mm. That's for the ones who like need it.
Right.
Like you guys don't need it.
Right.
And then the entitlement piece of that is like, but I don't know, because it's not equality and it's not equity.
No, it's about us first.
It's about us first.
And that was the question I asked in the sermon, which is like, if Jesus came back today, how much would we expect Jesus would come to us faithful churchy folk? Jesus would come back on a Sunday, which would be great because we'd all be sitting in church in our Sunday best.
Yep.
We're all gathered. We're ready. We're ready. And here comes Jesus, and he's going to come and give us all the good stuff first. It's like, biblically, no. Jesus is not going to be showing up to a church on a Sunday morning. Nope. He's going to be under a bridge somewhere on a Friday night. You know, that's where Jesus is going to show up. And that bugs people because they feel like, well, what about me? I'm doing life correct. So don't I get...
Rules. I have the right expectations. I see Jesus doing this thing. I expect that.
Why don't I get special treatment?
Yeah.
Come to us first. And that's what people saw was such a crime that Jesus should be killed. And then ultimately, though, Jesus will be killed by that same crowd.
Right.
Maybe not the exact same people, but that same cultural makeup will be the crowd of people chanting, crucify him, not much later in our story. So that's the ultimate end around. And the big full circle moment is like, they tried to kill him once. They'll succeed in the end.
Yep.
And what will that bring about?
Well, and so this gets to the Matt Skinner. Mm-hmm. Shout out Matt Skinner.
We love you, Matt Skinner.
The quote of, like, what are we threatened? Where is the threat to us if outsiders get welcomed in?
Right.
Like, what if too many outsiders get embraced? Mm-hmm. What is the threat to us?
Yeah.
And I'm botching that quote.
No, it's great. Yeah.
But that was the idea, was like, the threat is that it's not ours anymore.
Right. Yeah. The quote was from...
Jesus isn't ours in our hometown boy anymore.
We can't claim him.
For them?
he's for those people who break the rules and don't do the things we want them to do. The quote is from Huffington Post from 2017. And he writes, hospitality has ways of making people who receive it come inside and stick around, whether we really want them to or not. And that is just something that naturally happens when you extend generosity and justice to those people. And you know, the prospect of freedom and justice extended to others endangers our own privileges and power, we think, because we start to think, why do they get certain things that must, if other people are getting elevated, that must mean I'm getting demoted somehow. I'm going down if they get to go up. And then that turns to anger and rage. And now we want to throw somebody off the cliff.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what leads to our political climate today.
But it leads to a turning outside instead of a turning inside, though, right, too, to say those people.
Yeah.
And, you know, the elevation of those people and the Jesus looking at them, not a like what inside me feels entitled or has a status symbol or feels like I'm more worthy than them.
Right. And that should be good news for all of us. But if you're not in that, you know, if you don't see God working in that way, yeah, it could turn to resentment, which was exactly what happened in this story. Is these people thought God was going to be facing inward, but Jesus time and time again through the gospel says, no, I'm going to the last and the lowest and the least. I'm going there first. So that's where I'm going first.
Yeah.
This good news is going out and bringing them in, not we're going to start in and radiate out like some trickle down economics thing.
Yeah. That that's a Christian idea.
It's it's like, exactly countercultural to what the gospel has always said.
So then this message that Jesus is bringing really can only be in the context of his hometown, because he has to teach the lesson that it can't start in here.
Right.
As me, as the insider, me as your little poster child for whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
I have to kind of devastate your world here to say, I'm going to break out of that boundary and bring them in instead of bring you guys out.
Yeah. And that's why I preached from that perspective too, because that's our context here at All Saints Lutheran Church in Norwood, Young America, Minnesota.
Ooh.
Shout out. We're very white. That is who we are. Yeah. That is the demographics of the city as well. So, yeah, this is why when you read this passage, people in our context hear it as more law than gospel. But something I didn't think about or explore is if you were reading this passage this morning as one of those people who got deported recently, and you're scared and you don't know what the future holds and you don't know what's going to happen to your family, this would be really great news, right? That this is for you, that Jesus says to the people in power, this isn't for you. I'm going out to those people first. You would feel incredibly embraced and comforted by this message. So that's the whole gospel, you know, afflicts the comfortable and comforts the afflicted. You got to think outside of your own context. And that's what I tried to bring to the message this morning a little bit. But that's the other side of the story, is there's a lot of people who read this as really good news. And yeah, we just don't see that as much from our context, but I'm sure there are a lot of churches that explored that more.
That's good.
Yeah. You got anything else? What else you got?
Probably.
Yeah, you got some scribbles over there.
I got lots of scribbles. I'm debating where to go with that, because I think that is important. Well, and this is, you know, my sermon last week of saying good news and bad news and good news is that the hard part of this is it's not always good news for
us directly.
Us directly as a predominantly white, affluent, you know, church in kind of almost rural Minnesota. It's not going to be good news.
No.
It's actually going to be maybe kind of bad news.
Yeah, maybe. But you can see that as good news.
Right.
If you realize this is now Jesus inviting us into the story to go out and be a part of that good news dawning on these other contexts, these others, these outsiders that Jesus talks about, we now get to be part of that, you know, as the living, breathing body of Christ. We get to do that.
Yeah.
That's great news. But if you see it as, why aren't I being enriched right now? Yeah, it does seem like bad news, because it's like, well, what about me?
Well, so then I don't know, what feels maybe like the heavy part is that that feels like responsibility.
Yeah, that's
and
work. Yeah.
Like work, mm-hmm. and like I have to now participate in that.
Right.
In order for these other people to experience good news.
Right.
Like, yes, reading it and experiencing it and receiving this promise mm-hmm. is good news, but it takes a flip
yeah.
of the ones like us mm-hmm. to actually do the work. So
right.
you're still relying on like mm-hmm.
right.
other,
yeah.
I don't know. That's
I know.
What
And that's why ultimately, you know, the way I ended my sermon, I try to end on some good news, some gospel,
yeah.
is that the good news is, even for those who were attempting to push him off the cliff, even those who are in the crowd yelling, crucify him, which we have all at different points in our life been in those crowds, symbolically speaking, even those people are covered in love and grace from Jesus. So, you know, God comes in the form of Jesus to save the entire world, even when we're the ones in the crowd jeering. You know, so ultimately, the ultimate good news that has no work attached to it is, no matter what, Christ died for you and loves you. So even though, yes, this gospel story holds up the mirror and gives us a lot of law in there and makes us feel, oh boy, we have fallen short so many ways. In the end, those same people are covered in love and grace because of what Jesus did on the cross. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. There was no fine print that you have to be in a part of a chosen group. So that's the ultimate.
Well, and so, and there was no, hey, not you insiders, just the outsiders.
Right.
Then at that point, it was
the whole world,
all of you.
Yes.
And from a Jesus standpoint of like, I wanted to start with the outsiders to bring them for the last to be first and the first shall be last.
Right.
But I needed to bring them along to also bring you along.
Right. Yep.
In an all-encompassing. And yeah, I mean, that's where it feels hard to like, maybe to get lost in that a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Oh, this is good news for someone not like me. And it feels like work. And yeah, so ending with, no, this is actually good news for all of us.
For all of us, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I made a whole list of things that would maybe make me want to throw things off a cliff.
Yeah.
And I was, this is my hard transition to a different topic. I was thinking about when Darla was a puppy and she was a terror.
Okay.
She's still some days a terror.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. And I called it the throw her out the window phase when she was just so, like when puppies are so tough.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and they're loud and yippy, and they're chewing up your furniture and stuff, and that's the throw them out the window face.
Her Stitch, we also called it her Stitch face, like we
oh
Stitch.
For sure
Stitch, like,
experiment 626. Why do I know that? I don't know a lot of things, but I remember Stitch is experiment 626. Okay. I'm going to do some self-examination.
Okay. Well, I'm going back inside my emotions and brain of like, when do I want to throw things off a cliff or quit? I'm also a book quitter. Like, I read a lot.
Good.
But if I get in the middle of a book and I'm like, this sucks, I will quit it.
Don't waste your time on it. That's fine.
So things like that, where it's like,
you just throw that off
like
the window.
It. Throw it out the window.
Good.
Throw it off the cliff. Like, but this is the cliff example of that, because there are good things you can throw off a cliff too, right?
Or
like healthy things where you make a boundary.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But there are uncomfortable things that when you hit a point, you're like, ooh, that makes me uncomfortable. That's threatening my status or my whatever. I wrote down truth, fear, hard work. You get to a cliff and sometimes you're like, that's too hard.
Yep. Throw it out the window.
If it's boring, it's not exciting anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Powerlessness. This went into the Enneagram for me a little bit. I was like, ooh, if I feel like I've lost some power.
Yes.
Or some control over something. I'm like, not that thing.
Yeah.
Like,
throw that off the cliff.
Throw that off the cliff.
See you later. Yeah, we have to do that Enneagram.
purposelessness.
Yeah, that sort of rudderlessness feeling.
And then this kind of led me to, like, if Jesus is giving a message that makes me feel purposeless,
mm-hmm.
that makes me feel like I can't participate in it or do
right.
it or, you know, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Then what's the point of Jesus? Like, then what's the point of this message? Like, I want it to be for a purpose for me.
And I need something to fuel me.
And put myself in that hometown crowd place to say, Jesus came with this message that doesn't have a purpose.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
But it would if they could hear it of like,
that's true. That's,
you know, deny yourself, pick up your cross and start following.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus was there to say is, you know, Elijah and Elisha, they went out there. I'm going out there. That's where God is calling us all to be out there. So here's your purpose. You could pick it up and go if you wanted to, but that's hard.
I feel like here's my bad seminarian coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Can you put a little more details into Elijah, Elisha? I don't know if I'm
Elijah,
so
Elisha
familiar
of
with
their whole stories of the widow.
Like, why is he bringing this up? You know,
he's bringing this up.
The illustration that he's using.
I think as a way to articulate his point that this is where God will go first is to those people, because the Syrian and the widow who was from, I did this twice this morning, Zarephath, not only are those outsider, Naaman the Syrian and the widow at Zarephath, and because she's a woman, she doesn't get a name. That's just a Bible thing. In Sidon, so the reason why those two are cited is because not only were they outsiders, but they were also enemies of the people of Israel. It's kind of like when we hear the Good Samaritan story, we go like, oh, a Good Samaritan, he's just a good guy. It's like what's lost in translation is that the Samaritans were enemies. They weren't, it wasn't like, here's this guy. It's like, these are the people you're supposed to hate the most, but they're the ones that are either the conveyor of God's grace or the receiver of God's grace. And it's like, what does that mean? So the reason why those were cited by Jesus specifically from that scroll from Isaiah that he read in the temple, I think is to extra highlight, like God is going out to those people. And not only that, but they're also the people that you would least expect. They're the people you don't want to
not
receive
just
it.
Like a, oh, we feel sorry for them or like,
no,
oh, we don't really...
It's like
resonate
these.
With
what
them.
Those?
It's
these
like,
are the people that I do not jive with at all. Like my enemy is going to get this.
These
what does that
I
mean?
Really want to throw off the cliff?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I wrote down that quote. You said God goes first to the enemy.
Yeah, that's that's what we hear.
Yeah.
Even though it's hard to digest.
Which would make the irony of the hometown even greater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I grew up in. I went to Lakeville South, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you're going to go to Lakeville North first.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Here's me bringing myself into this.
Yeah.
Right? It's not
me
a
as a
right now,
an Edina kid, you know. Yes, cake eater every day. I need attention. I've heard it all, but it would be like, yeah, Jesus, you're going to those folks in Eden Prairie.
As a Jayhawk.
Oh yeah.
Go to Iowa State.
Oh,
like,
those cyclones, those dirty cyclones. Yeah, nasty. Yeah, that's tomorrow. We'll see.
Or Kansas State. Or what
exactly. Yeah, so that's the point. I think that's why specifically those stories from Elijah and Elisha are chosen.
Okay, because they highlight that.
They highlight. Yeah, there were widows in Israel. Why didn't they go to the widows in Israel? Elijah or Elisha, they had the opportunity. There was a great famine in Israel happening, too. Why did that, you know, why to Naaman the to people in Syria? No way. But that's exactly what happened. The people in the temple that day read that story and lost sight of what those things meant, I think, because that's why Jesus wanted to highlight it.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, and part of it, like, I mean, we hear this from teenagers and kids, like, the Old Testament is confusing.
It
There's
is, yeah.
There's a lot going on.
A lot of history
There's
in there.
A lot of history.
A lot
There's
of names and countries that don't exist as
for
such
the men.
Anymore for the men. Yeah, just a
names
lot of men.
For the men.
Names for the men, none
men.
For the women.
But
that's
so,
true in the New Testament, too. But yes, that's true. It's true everywhere.
True in our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then we get to these things where Jesus is trying to highlight, like, hey, this story is actually what I'm demonstrating and talking about. And we're like, that Old Testament story that I should probably know, but
we
I don't
need
know.
That
like,
one. Yeah,
right.
We can cut that one out.
So that's where it is it gets really mucky sometimes. We're like, but I just need the gospel.
Yeah, just tell me the good stuff.
And Jesus is the one bringing the gospel along with the entire Old Testament. So, like,
yeah,
that's not a throw off the cliff.
No, you need both.
Because you need both of them. And I don't.
You need the law and the gospel because that's what makes it go, you know, or else it loses all of its go.
But there's gospel within those Old Testament stories too.
We so could we could do a whole sermon series where we ditch the gospel in the lectionary and just go
podcast series.
Yeah, just preach the Old Testament because there's good news in the Old Testament. There's gospel in the Old Testament
but
too.
I'm thinking of our confirmation kids like glazing over as
yeah,
we try to
because that's
talk
what
about
we're doing.
The Old Testament.
Right. That's what we're doing this year.
And like they, you know, they're like, so what? Like, yeah. Oh, the prophets.
Yeah. Why are we talking about these old guys? Because that's what this year is, Old Testament. Our confirmation is a 3-year cycle. We do Old Testament, New Testament, and catechism. Mm-hmm. And this year's the Old Testament, which can be for some the most boring year of confirmation. Cause I'm talking about a lot of old histories and kings and prophets and kingdoms and things. And it's like, oh my gosh, what does this matter? But it does matter if you view it in the context of which it's pointing to, which I think that time and time again in the Old Testament, you see God making a covenant with God's people and these kings being anointed and raised up by God, and the people always fall short. We always break the covenant. The kings always do gross stuff. And then the prophet has to come in and tell the king how gross he is. And then it's like we got to renew the covenant with a new king in a new place in a new time and try again. And it's like we try. Why isn't this working? Well, because we need Jesus.
Well, and in those tries is also like there's grace.
Yeah, there's grace in it too.
In all of those tries. But yes, there is this setup of like, we need.
We need a savior. We need a Messiah.
The living word.
We need it. Yeah.
Embody that.
Yeah, we get caught in these same old traps.
Yep.
And if you have Jesus, then you can break out of them while also seeing all the ways we're still falling short. So we still need Jesus. We still are going to fall short. The law is still the law. But if we can cling to Jesus and put it all at the cross, we can move forward. Does that seem like a good place to end?
No?
Okay, you got more?
I do, because now I have a question for you. Have you gone back to your hometown to preach?
Yes, and that's what I was, it came to me of like, I should tell that story, but then I'm like, am I comparing myself too much to Jesus? And I've done that before. I have preached that. The last time I preached this text, I did talk about the time I went back to Normandale Lutheran Church in Edina, Minnesota, shout out.
Shout out.
Yeah.
But it's Jesus saying it.
Yeah,
so
it's true. I know.
Comparing yourself to Jesus, but not really.
Not really.
Jesus is talking about it. That
exactly.
A prophet's not welcome.
And that's what I kind of talked about last time was that I preached this like summer series we did where it was like a parking lot service. So it didn't feel like a real service, by the way, which was really nice because it was one of my first times preaching as a baby pastor. So it's a real nice soft landing for me. It's like I could be outside, not a lot of people there. I'm not in like the pulpit that I remember from my childhood where like, you know, the giants of my faith, you know, when you're a kid, you see your pastor and you're like, that is God, you know? So I'm like, at least I didn't have to, but like, at least I didn't have to get up in that pulpit because that would have freaked me out. So I was just standing outside. So it was actually a nice ease into it. But the thing I went back to was like all of these people who showed up to hear me preach because I'm the hometown guy, they have so much dirt on me. Because it was like my old basketball coach and all my buddies from high school and all these people showed up and I'm looking around the crowd and I have to give a sermon and I'm like, you all know too much about me. I don't like that.
I have talked about this. I think it's harder to preach or to do anything in a group of people that are like public speak, in a group of people who you know and know you
for sure.
Than it is in a group of strangers.
Like, I would hate to preach at one of those like ministerium things like we went to last week where it's a room full of clergy. And luckily I think we always just make the bishop do it, which is kind of the bishop's job. But yeah, I would
shout
hate
out
to.
Bishop Jen.
Yeah, shout out Jen. Thank you, Jen. We love you, Jen. And it would be really hard to do because you're in a room of people that not only know you, but also, you know, it's just there's a lot of pressure to that. Whereas, I would much rather go to just a room full of strangers. And also, you could tell that room full of strangers whatever you want. and it wouldn't
kind
really,
of, yeah.
kind of, you could kind of have carte blanche to just be like, this is the stuff I've always wanted to say, and you're all strangers to me, so I don't have to feel like, are you gonna feel weird about this? Because you now at this point, I've been at All Saints for 4.5 years or something. And when I look around the room at the people sitting in the pews, I know them well enough to know their stories.
Yes.
I know roughly their political leanings. I know roughly their feelings on certain social issues and hot button issues. And as I look around, I know whose eyes to avoid when I make a point. I'm like, "Ooh, I feel like this
But
might hit that person wrong." That doesn't mean I'm not going to say it, but it does feel like, "Ugh, you
they
know,
know you only in the context
of
of a
pastor,
pastor.
not as Matt the person, you know, the basketball." Bad basketball, by the way. I was always bad at all sports. You could just blanket statement. I'm bad at sports.
Not the bench sitter on the
The bench
basketball
sitter,
team.
Matt. Yeah, that's how most people in that context would know me if it was my real hometown. But yeah, it's yeah, they know me as pastor, so they look at me. The relationship is different.
I feel like mine's a little bit different. You didn't ask me yet, but I'm just gonna jump
Yeah,
into
what is it
talking
like
about
when
me.
you preach to your hometown conversation? Sorry, I didn't turn it around.
I haven't gotten a chance to preach to my hometown congregation. But I was their youth director for a
Yeah,
long
right.
time. I grew up there, and then you also grew up
Yeah,
there.
and my context was I was also I was like an interim youth director person. So yeah, kind of similar to yours.
So, and then, yeah, and then was the youth director, and like there's a veil around the youth director that is just the fun one or the
Yeah,
silly
right.
one or like the doesn't take anything seriously one. And as I can be pretty serious.
Yeah.
Like, you
You
know,
get into
and
it.
I think that preaching is very serious.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. Yeah. Especially on a Sunday like this.
especially on a Sunday like
After
this.
the week we've
So,
had and the text that we have coming up, it's like, yeah, you have to look at your preacher as somebody who's going to be bringing you the word and don't look at them as the youth director that just gets to play in the toy box all day. It's like, come on, I got some weight to what I'm trying to say.
And that's where it's like that would be the harder part to go back and be
True.
like, no, what I'm saying is serious. Like, this is actually like, and you know, oh, well, it would be the like, it wasn't entertaining. Yeah, because you have a high standard of like fun entertainment because you know me in, you know, playing big stupid group games
You're expecting
at
that I'm
like,
gonna get a pie in my face like I do at every
And
fundraising activity. You know, it's like, I know, but I'm actually here to tell you something.
so that is such a restriction then to hear any kind of gospel, to hear any kind of good news, to hear it like, or law, like whatever, you know, any kind
Both.
of message is just because you are sitting there being like, yeah, when's she gonna get pied in the face? And then when that doesn't happen, you're like, well, I don't know what she said. What, like, so,
Which is why those th little things matter, like symbols and things matter. You know, every once in a while we'll get confirmation kids or whatever asking, like, why do you wear robes? Why do you wear that scarfy thing around your neck? Or like, why do I do my best? Because I call you Dana when we're just informal. But when I'm in front of people, our congregation, I try to call you Pastor Dana as much as I can because those
I
things
try to,
matter.
and
It's hard. I
it's
because
hard.
yeah, we have a good relationship, so it's like friendly and congenial. But like, there's something about those symbols that really matter. So yeah, if the youth person is going to come up there and give a sermon, it's like they're wearing an official thing to show you I'm doing an official thing and you're going to call me an official name. So I don't know. It just adds some weight to it too.
And it's not about us. Like, it's not about me wearing the robe and looking the official part. It's about the message that this message is serious, and the way that I need to present it also needs to be the appropriate way to present
Yeah,
it.
so you
So,
will respect the
well,
messenger.
and this goes back to like, you're not going to tell a funny joke or tell a story to compare yourself to Jesus on a passage on a weekend that has some real implications for what's happening
There's
in the
stuff in the
world
world that we need
right
to get
now. That
to.
there are kids who came home from school on Friday and their parents were
gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
That there are families being split apart and there are people fearing for their actual lives. And you're going to say, oh, I felt like Jesus this time.
Yeah.
Like,
here's a Sven and Oli joke like I did a couple weeks ago. And it's like, I can't really start with a funny, quippy joke.
Landed great.
For that context. Day. Yes. For that context.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all depends on where you're going from, coming from, and what you're trying to do rhetorically with the message.
And for a congregation who doesn't experience these things
firsthand,
because we're not immigrants fearing for our lives at this moment, there has to be a way to communicate, like, they are those immigrants who you have so successfully separated yourself from, physically and you know, maybe emotionally, mentally, you don't have to think about them if you don't want to. Those are still God's beloved children.
Those are your neighbors too.
That needs to come through.
Yes, it's a privilege for us to be able to go, I'm just going to turn off the news because I don't want to deal with it, you know. I don't want to be political because it's too much for me. And it's like, that sounds nice. And I do, I mean, I'm guilty of that a lot of times too. If I'm getting too burnt out and I can't handle the news cycle, it's like, I could just shut that off and go, you know, watch Severance or whatever I happen to be watching at the time. And then I don't have to think about it for a little while. But it's like you said, that's a privilege because some people are living it.
Oh man. Okay. So this is, it's a privilege to be confused.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And go, I don't know. Somebody educate me, please.
And that is the exact point that I think the policies and the administration and the media is trying to do.
Yeah, confuse it by doing too much.
Because I don't have to know it.
No.
And bringing it back to this, the confusion enrages me.
Yeah.
Brings me from, my hometown boy to rage.
Yeah.
For the purpose of, well, not for the purpose of, but because of being confused.
Yeah.
Not for an actual rage of my life.
Yeah.
Right? Like
I am
confused and I'm enraged because of my privilege.
Yeah.
And that is the privilege to think that I'm entitled to the most clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Not I should be enraged for life.
For the actual intolerance.
For the actual
thing. Yeah, that's happening. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, there's my that's my revelation through this. I haven't thought about that yet. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. Confusion quickly goes to rage.
To rage, yeah. Because you get confused and then you feel embarrassed and then you feel like, this is too much for me, I'm mad.
Yeah.
So everything, there's a great, I think it's a Hank Green quote that everything is a conspiracy if you don't know how things work. You know what I mean? You could just turn everything, you see some floating lights in the sky and you go, that's confusing to me. I don't know what that is. It's a mass conspiracy and it's something, it's the government is out to get me or something. And it's like, it's because you don't know how things work.
Yeah.
Like, and if you could look up and see that that was just a crop duster plane that's out, you know, surveying the field or doing whatever. It's like, there's an explanation, but your confusion turns to rage, which can very quickly turn into a conspiracy theory.
But that's everything right now.
Yeah, it's every. I don't know how anything works. I don't know how vaccines work, but it's like, I'm going to try to trust.
That's not the example I was going to go for. I was going to go for DEI.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how that works. Yeah.
Diversity.
Equity and inclusion. And inclusion. Yeah.
Like, when these people throwing out this buzzword of DEI don't know how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's confusing. So now I'm mad and I don't like it because things I don't know must just be inherently bad. Yeah, I know. It's a buzzword and it's the buzzword for the moment. And I'm excited to hear what the next one is. A couple months, there'll be a new buzzword.
I'm not.
I'm being flippant, but I'm just being.
I'm being serious because.
I know, but I'm uncomfortable with your seriousness, so I'm going to joke about it. It's a defense mechanism.
Okay, well, we're spiraling down.
I'm losing it.
No, I think that's what.
Here's what I found.
Oh, hi Siri. Oh,
Siri,
she listened.
She searched my spiral downward.
Yeah, shout out Siri.
8 ways to break a downward spiral.
Cool. All right. She could feel your blood pressure was rising.
I was really.
Your heart rate was increasing. It's like you need to breathe.
But this is why education is important. This is why knowing who Jesus is important. This is why when we throw out really big life-altering things, like that, they're actually important.
Right.
And and this idea that like if I don't know what it is, it's scary. Then educate yourself.
Throw it off the cliff.
Like,
yeah.
Then, no,
do that first. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Who was it? Kylie Kelsey. It was like Google's free.
Yeah,
like,
Google's free.
Go Google it.
You can figure it
you
out.
Don't know what it is. Don't like learn the history of things. My my dad loves history, and yeah, like there. We study history so as not to repeat it. And here we are in a world that's like trying to repeat it because we clearly we haven't learned from it.
Yeah.
Like, so,
you can't, we can't get lazy now. Stay on top of things, Google things, know your history. But like you said at the beginning with the things you want to throw off a cliff, it's also good boundaries to know when you're about to crash out and be like, I can stop for a minute and breathe. And you can even accept that as like,
yeah.
This is a privilege too, and I know it's a privilege, but also let's, you know, we shouldn't all try to kill ourselves. We got crazy things happening in our own personal lives too, maybe not to the extent of, you know, deportation or disease or, you know, whatever, but still, you can still be stressed out at home and go, I just can't deal with another thing on the news cycle, and you can turn it off and protect your mental health and everything.
Yeah.
But that's exactly why we wanted to do this podcast. Is this is a way and a format to say, you know, have these conversations in your own home too, because this is how you learn and grow and everything, is you ask questions and you dig deeper and listen to each other and have a more informal place to do that. That's good. And that's something that we're losing in our society too. It's just informal places for people to sit and exchange ideas and talk about things that they disagree with and agree with, and how can we make these disagreements work together and become a more equitable society.
Well, and the Bible is a living, breathing word. So yeah, you gave great sermon, but like there is more, there is depth, there is, you know, things that will hit me differently than they hit you, that will hit different conversations.
Yeah.
And there, yeah, there's kind of a like entertainment in that too, that the next time we read this or go through
this, we'll have a completely different thing.
We'll have a totally different way to talk about it.
Because we've been telling these stories for thousands of years.
Yeah.
We should be out of ideas by now, but the living word just keeps prying stuff out.
So, how do we end this?
I would say, that's why we decided to do this, is because there's more in the living word. So, keep coming back. And if you have questions or things you wanted to talk to us about, go to our website. Our emails are on there. Phone number's on there. Stop by church. But call ahead or email ahead. So we're here. We're not always here. We got, you know, hospital calls and things to do outside of the actual church building. But we'd love to continue this conversation with you, dear listener. So I hope to hear from any of you and all of you.
Yeah.
All right.
Love ya.
Love ya. Bye.